God commanded Abraham to go up a mountain called Moriah. Mountains are big in the Bible. Large, technicolor places where people go to get closer to God. And there, on the mountain, Abraham was commanded to sacrifice his only son. Before this day, Abraham thought that his God might be different from other gods. Abraham's God had made a promise to him to give him a son through which all the nations of the world would be blessed. Abraham's God was a God who gave good gifts. Other gods were always asking for sacrifices, obeisance, gifts. And of course, there's no greater sacrifice to be rendered to God than the gift of a human life. So as Abraham journeyed up the mountain, he thought, isn't this just typical of a God, any God, to want my only son? Imagine his thoughts as he trudged up that mountain with the wood on his back and the blessed, innocent, unknowing only son walking next to him. Father, where's the sacrifice? Said the little boy, looking inquiringly into the father's eyes. There was wood, a fire, a knife, but no ram. God will provide, said the old man. And then they get to the top of the mountain, and there is this horrible, unimaginable scene as Abraham binds Isaac as if he were a lamb and raises his knife over the boy and, wait, the test is passed. You dared even to offer your only son to me. You gave yourself completely to my will. God provides a sacrifice. There, a ram caught in the thicket. You pass the test. God will provide. The promise that God makes to Abraham and the people of Israel, the relationship between God and humanity, all that will be maintained by God, who provides that which even the sacrifice of Abraham's only son cannot provide. Now, we say that human sacrifice is unthinkable to us, and yet we do it all the time. We know that few great things are accomplished without some pain, some cost, some sacrifice. What good can be done without sacrifice? When we talk about accomplishing the greatest good for the greatest number, utilitarian philosophy, how do we think that's going to happen without sacrifice? Perhaps that's why the greater good, the greater the sacrifice. And we have shown in our own time that we are quite willing to go up some sacrificial mountain in order to work some great good. The way we figure it, if we are going to secure our lives, make a difference, live forever, be happy, whatever it is we want most in life, then we're going to have to make some sacrifice to do it. A few years back, Millard Fuller, the founder of Habitat for Humanity, preached at Duke University and told how he and his wife decided to move their family out of a comfortable, affluent suburban existence to the poor quarter of America's Georgia, and there wait for God to tell them what to do next. In due course, God told them to begin building houses for poor people, one house at a time. And a question seemed to hang in the air there on that privileged campus. How old were Fuller's children when he made that move to America's? The dean of the chapel told me the first time he was asked the question, he said, well, they must have been small. They're all grown up now. And he said he didn't get the point until he was asked the question a second time. How old were Fuller's children when he and his wife decided to uproot their family and move to America's Georgia? And then it dawned on him. It's fine for Millard Fuller to have some sort of strange religious experience, get converted, be born again, do whatever he wants to do. But it's not fine for him to drag his helpless, hapless children there with him. That's unfair. That violates the freedom and dignity of those children. And he said one of the folks who asked him the question was a man whose daughter the dean knew to have been on birth control pills since she was 16, and whose son was in the series of treatments in drug abuse centers. So maybe the question is not, will we sacrifice our children? The question is, which God will have the altar upon which we sacrifice our children? Because we're all busy laying our kids' lives on some altar. So the question is not if we will be like Abraham and willing to sacrifice our children to our God, but rather which God will it be that we shall sacrifice the lives of our children? No ethic that is worthy does not require the risk of the sacrifice of those we love. We might wish there was some means of holding convictions, dedicating ourselves to something bigger than ourselves, without requiring the sacrifice of friends and family. And so we define love as a solitary emotion of an individual that doesn't ask anyone anything of anyone, or ask someone else to suffer because of our love. Clergy sometimes complain that it's unfair for the church to expect their children and spouses to make sacrifices because of their father or mother's vocation. And certainly some of the sacrifices the churches expect are trivial and demeaning. But we should not be surprised that faithfulness entails sacrifice. Any ethic worth having involves the tragic. I knew a professor who grew up as a missionary son in China. And when China was opened up in the late 60s, he ventured back and was quite impressed with how far China had come in the course of 40 years. He returned back to the States, much taken with the communist revolution and its results. And then somebody asked him, "Isn't it fairly well known that when Mao undertook his revolution, he essentially starved to death 3 million of his fellow Chinese?" And the professor answered, "Well, it isn't easy bringing a country into the modern world. 3 million people might have died in the revolution, but think how many people now have enough food to eat." The Romans practiced human sacrifice all the time. If we are going to rule the whole world with a far-flung imperial government, then there will be costs, the Romans figured. One day, the Romans crucified over 2,000 victims in Jerusalem. The Romans had a mountain where they loved to sacrifice troublemakers who resisted their governance in Judea. The mountain was named Calvary. As Abraham led his son, his only son, up the mountain, it must have seemed to him a cruel irony. Here was his son, the child that had been born to him in his old age, a miraculous blessing of God, who was to be the first installment of a promise to bless the nations of the world. And now that loving gift of God was in peril. How could the same God who gave Isaac as a blessing now demand Isaac as a sacrifice? Maybe every blessing entails some sacrifice. And there are questions. Is the sacrifice worth it? Is this God worthy of such a severe cost? As God saw his only son being led up the mountain, surely God had second thoughts. Is my promise worth such a severe cost? There was no wood for the fire, just wood made into a cross. Did the father regret his promise? His promise from the beginning to have a people who would bless all the world's people? Did the father know that the promise would be so very costly as his son trudges up the mountain with a cross on his back? "Father, where is the lamb? Everything's here, the cross, the nails, but not the sacrifice." "I will provide," says the father. And as the altar is made ready for the oblation, the wood hoisted on high, the hammer and the nails, no one yells, "Stop." And the son, the only son, looks into the father's eye and asks, "My God, Why have you forsaken me? And no one said why, and no one stopped the sacrifice. And he breathed his last, and he died. And so God passed the test. I asked God how much he loved me, and he stretched out his arms on the cross and died. God promised to love us, to make something out of us, to bring us back to himself no matter how much it costs. And God has kept his promise, even unto death. One day on a mountaintop, God did that which God never asked anyone, even Abraham, to do. God once again provided the sacrifice, and this time it was God's own son, not a ram, but a lamb. And thereby God proved what lengths God would go to bless the world. The greatest good that God promised to work could only be accomplished through God's greatest gift. God provides what is required to set things right and free us from our captivity. The Lamb, the Son, is the gift, the sacrifice of God's own self, out of God's own promise to love us no matter what. And so, in the liturgy, after the sins have been confessed and the priest has pronounced forgiveness, Archbishop Cranmer instructed that a Bible verse be said, God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Amen.